Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro. This is episode number 116. The title today, Preparation versus Rehabilitation. And I get the great opportunity to discuss this topic and some related things with my amazing and awesome co-host, PK. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Jay-Z. Too kind, as always. Looking forward to diving into what you have prepared for us today. What a tasty treat this will be.
Yes, and just I feel like diving right in today, although there's probably room for small talk and singing somewhere. We'll get to that because, as everyone knows, our objectives here at the Lifetime Athlete Podcast are to help everyone to be truly hard to kill, achieving peak performance through the lifespan without sacrificing health and longevity. So that's our focus. Hey, thanks for being here, of course. And also, this is rock and roll health and fitness edutainment. So something could come up. I don't like it. We don't have this stuff planned, folks. Okay. So if I actually do dive right in, depending upon your viewpoint, you can view the human peak performance field. I think that's what I like to use an umbrella term to call this global field that I work in and that you and I discuss in, as having two distinct arms or branches. These would be physical preparation and rehabilitation. Physical prep, would also be called training or strength and conditioning and readiness augmentation, just to name a few. Mm. I like that one. Readiness. That's good. And it's true. Rehabilitation can, for the purposes of today's discussion, include, pain management, injury addressing or resolution, surgery, healing, corrective movement, physical therapy, and others. So in a nutshell, these are the things that we lifetime athletes are involved in through this journey. And in an ideal situation, we're mostly in the physical prep side of this equation or competition and not spending very much time on the rehab side. There is even some potential for overlap or concurrency in these arenas, or in other words, physical prep and rehab going on simultaneously. But we're going to chop that up today.
Got it. Okay. So yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned competition in there, because I was thinking, is that like wedged right in between? That's not even a branch. It's just like a little sliver, a moment in time when you're actually, the preparation, if it's leading to something, then it's a different event, or you're kind of putting competition, or like, let's say you're training for something, into the preparation side of things.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll be challenged to give it a great answer. So basically, physical preparation would be the stuff you're doing on a regular basis that's going towards a goal while you're in a pain-free state. And so that's really where we want to be most of the time. Mm. But then, something happens. And so, the S is effed up. The BOD's not working quite right. So now we've got to fix stuff before we can get back to that. So hopefully that.
Got it. Hopefully we're clear. If and when you are competing, you're doing that in a healthy state. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. So competition, or let's just say those life quests, life goals, the backpack trip, the garden, the family reunion, those things count as competition as well in kind of a broader sense. And so it's that's the stuff we're working for, and that's where all the joy and celebration is. And, if we have issues, we have to be on the rehab side, but we want to try to keep that as temporary or expedient as possible.
Got it. Okay. Carry on, my friend.
Well, first of all, I'm a movement smith. That's what I am. That's what I do. I'm not really a wordsmith, but.
Oh, how dare you? How dare you? All those tasty little nugs that you disperse to the world, I would say you're at least both.
Oh, I love a nug. I think there are some knowledge nugs today, but getting into this, what I'd like to do, with your permission, PK, is discuss physical preparation and rehabilitation using some different words. First of all, as a continuum, next as a progression, and finally as a seesaw. And I think I can make that make sense.
Absolutely. Carry on.
Okay. So a continuum, per dictionary definition, is a continuous sequence in which adjacent elements are not perceptibly different from each other although the extremes are quite distinct.
Got it.
In this manner, the early stages of rehab from serious injury or surgery can look very different from the training in which an athlete is tapering and peaking for a competition or goal. But when we view the transitions through multiple stages, they become seemingly similar.
Okay, it makes sense. I think I'm tracking. I'm assuming you're going to put these into context in terms of prep versus rehab, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's where we're heading. Okay. And I just thought these words were good to help paint the picture.
Yep.
And next up is progression. So a progression, also another definition, is the process of developing or moving gradually towards a more advanced state. So I often use this model when I'm describing what I would call a one-way journey from injury back to peak performance status. And the model that I use, and we've talked about here on the show, is healing, rehabilitation, training, competition. So those things kind of move along, you know, in that upwardly progressing direction. Small mm-hmm. amounts of overlap in the phases, but for the most part, it's a one-way journey.
Mm-hmm.
But then lastly, what I think is perhaps the best way to look at preparation and rehabilitation, I mean, I could say versus rehabilitation, but sure. just look at these things, is as a seesaw. And why I picked seesaw is because I think most of us have childhood or even adult playground experience with it. And the more heavily we are weighted on one side, the lighter we are on the other, you know, basically, you know,
sure.
the more weight we put on one side, we know what's going to happen. It, you know, one end's going to go down and the other's going to stay up. And so
sure.
That's, I think, to me, that makes more sense. As we were talking about earlier, it's like, oh, you know, you're either in one or you're in the other. So there isn't really a lot of balance between the two things. If we need to fix movement patterns and function and ability, we invest heavily, the key word, in that and restore the athlete to high-level training. So while we need both of these items, there isn't really much of a balance point where they are all just sort of blended together and going on simultaneously. To me, that's ineffective. That's an ineffective model. It would be tenuous on a seesaw, you know, to try to get that balance point. And if we do one thing right, we really don't need the other at that time. Said differently, if we're training optimally, outside of having accidents, we don't really have many injuries, and we don't have, you know, too many needs to address things. Then when there is an injury or a movement dysfunction, we really don't try to train through that and just throw load on bad movement patterns and pain. Instead, we fix it first correctly. And, you know, then we can move back into the training. So this is just all food for thought that I want to offer up.
Sure. I mean, and I think many on the, especially the seesaw, should, you know, should do one or the other if you're sort of doing it properly through the Jay-Z lens. That's illustrative to me. I think the first one, you know, a continuum that has almost, I don't know, it's just not really reflective of life. Certainly a progression can be, but then there's an end point. What happens when you are sort of off that compete and you're, you know, if your line is trending up? The seesaw, you've given me something to think about here, just because what I'm hearing is it's one or the other. You know, we can't get both. And if we do, then we're doing a disservice to either of them independently. So knowing where you're at and like choosing what's important. And we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, just about how if you have an injury, then you need to modify what you're doing to address that. And interesting, John, very interesting.
Yeah. Just bouncing back with what you said. It's,
sure.
You know, a juggling act if one is trying to maybe do both at once. And I'm not saying there aren't some circumstances where that can occur, but for the most part, it starts to look ineffective. And I would even say this, that, you know, this is stronger talk, but, you know, chronic rehab is really a sign of crappy training
mm-hmm.
or ineffective rehab, because rehab is designed to get an outcome. And mm-hmm. training is designed to keep a person healthy and functioning. So if either one of those things is going incorrectly, we're always bouncing into a rehab model, and we don't spend as much time in the peak performance side of life where we really deserve to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's a great point. If you do have the chronic rehab, then something is off and a change is needed if you want a different outcome.
Yeah, and it comes down to movement. You know, if movement is suboptimal, that's a better word than fecal, maybe, or actually, who knows? That's where the problem comes in. And so if the movement is poor, either the training is not appropriate for, you know, the individual, or the practitioner who is providing instruction on either side of that, you know, whether it's in the training or in the rehab, is, you know, marginal at best, because someone who's really good should be able to support good movement and good tissue health and systemic health in a person and not have them chronically be in, you know, the pain center.
No doubt.
Okay, probably said enough. So here are some of the key points to describe physical preparation. Well, the goal in training isn't really to fill up a workout log. They don't give prizes out for that. It's really to develop capacities and skills. And we never want to forget that, you know, that really achieving goals and victories is what it's all about. So it's not only what you do as in training, it's what you do does for you. So what does that training give you in terms of these abilities and outcomes?
John, I mean, I don't know, maybe watch different YouTube channels, but there's this thrilling competition where people just bring out their workout notebooks and just show them. And it is amazing. I love it. The winners are just physical demons. It's great stuff.
I'll just move along. So we use the elements in training and in physical preparation of program design and application. So we've discussed that at length actually on the show, and it's really, you know, I don't need to go too deep, but I would just say this. The goal is always to get you from where you are now to where you want to be at some point in the future. Training and physical preparation has to fit the athlete, the body type, the goals, the personality, the training age, the injury history, the schedule that's available, the age, and that list goes on and on. We always want to keep the elements of fun, play, and joy intact in these experiences as human beasts. And really our, you know, one of our key objectives is to get results without getting hurt.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that little, the meat of what you just laid out there to fit the athlete, we're all athletes for the goal. I mean, it's highly personalized. In other words, it really, to be maximum effectiveness, to work, to not get you into the, you know, that hurt range, it's going to be unique to who you are as an athlete and where you want to go.
One size don't fit all, you know, and so we always use those general, you know, major principles, but then we have to customize it and individualize it for every person to get the best result. And I love it that you said, of course, because it is a captain, us. Okay. So here's the nuts and bolts of rehabilitation. You know, we want to support an environment that helps to heal acutely damaged tissues. So when, you know, when a fire is raging in the body, we want to get that put out. But soon enough, you know, really what we need to do in rehabilitation, this is the key take home, is we want to identify what the deficiencies are or the root causes of suboptimal movements, because these patterns, they either cause the problem or there will be subsequent problems if we don't correct and optimize them.
Yeah. Now we've talked about this enough that really seems common sense and science just, you know, crashing into one another in sort of a light bulb moment. But the fact that we're talking about it so often, it just doesn't seem like it's absorbed into something that's necessary.
No, and I wouldn't say that it's a character flaw for most people. It's more, it's overlooked that, gosh, yes, you know, this hurt, now it's sort of healed and it doesn't hurt me anymore. So I can therefore just go back to doing what I wanted to do. But really where, say, like the movement professional would come in is say, well, okay, you're out of most of your pain. but you're not moving ideally. And so now we're going to have accelerated wear and tear and, and potentially decreased performance, possibly even injury. Sometimes those things, you know, you can get into some debates when you look at statistics, what's predictable. But ultimately, I think in rehab, we want to restore ideal movement function and patterns, and then return the athlete to full trainability. So now they can leave rehab and they can go really train to their heart's content, which is, you know, really what most people want to do.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. I got it. I'm tracking all this. All right. Making a hell of a lot of sense.
That's because you're a wonderful human being.
Oh, is that? Is that why? I don't know. That's most the most highly questionable thing you said today.
Well, what I mean is, okay, you're a guy of, you know, great wit and intellect. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But also you are good at deductive reasoning. And also what I would call an excellent convergent thinker. So, you know, this is all something that we just came up, but like, you know, you can get to the point and take the pieces and put them together logically very well, you know, maybe better than I can. And I love hanging out with you for that reason. So here's where they're all the same. So in other words, physical preparation and rehabilitation are the same because every service provider in this relationship, seesaw, continuum progression is a coach.
You know, when you and I are big fans of the idea of a coaching relationship. So break that down for me.
Yeah. So first of all, we can start naming coaches, you know, so you've got head coach, skills coach, assistant coach, strength and conditioning coach, health coach, life coach, trainer, instructor, therapist, technician, counselor, physician, assistant. And that list goes on and on. So every person in those roles, by definition, is a coach because of this. Here's another one of these dictionary things. A coach is someone who provides specialized instruction. And I'd take that further, kind of TLA-ify it, to state that he or she is a caring professional who has your back, wants you to succeed, and uses the expertise they have available to help you reach your desired outcome.
Yeah, your shared desired outcome. Absolutely.
So the thing about coaching that I think is important is it's a human relationship. You know, it involves exchange and listening, observing, communicating. The art, really, art and science of giving and receiving feedback, how to be objective, when to be instinctive, how much do we need to be considerate. There can be tough love at times in a coaching relationship, but smiles and laughter should be there to go with the occasional tears or angst of life if that's a part of it. And so I think it's awesome work, but it's tough and serious work as well.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you brought up that last point because, you know, the, just the instruction or just the insight or the professional, you know, experience and knowledge needs to be paired, I think, to be most effective with the human side and, you know, listening, observing, communicating as you detailed, and then seeing where the person that you're coaching is at to give them what they need at the moment in time and be open on the other side, the flip side of that coin, as the person being coached, being open to both the instruction and then the, you know, the leadership or the mentorship or, you know, the human side of that relationship. It's highly rewarding when it goes well. And we have seen there's so many different examples in the sports world that we can draw from when poor coaching or poor teamwork just ends up disastrous despite all the talent or capability of whatever the person or the team is.
Yeah, there can be magic there when it's good and misery when it's not. Maybe we've even personally, I think everybody has had some of these experiences, especially when you look at the global definition of coaching like we're using. So it certainly could be your experience on a high school sports team, but it also could be any of those other interactions in life. And I'd kind of progress right along and I'd say we all benefit from this coaching and these coaching relationships, but we need more team in our world.
What do you mean?
Well, using coaches, especially in preparation and rehab, so some of those names we just mentioned, you know, it can save things. You can save time and money and effort and frustration because you cut to the chase and you get better results by working, you know, in that dedicated relationship with an expert. but you have to be coachable. And you have to trust and commit to that. And that's not easy. And sometimes it's just a dynamic. Each person has to find the coach that they're going to align with. And, you know, that there's some personality factors. Yeah. But then there are also some people, I'm not going to use names. I think you and I know a few, and one I'm thinking of who, a guy who's just uncoachable. I refuse to work with him. Sure. Because he's not able to trust and commit to any level that could even benefit him. He's uncoachable.
Sure, sure. I mean, furthermore, combative. You know, we've all seen that where, you know, someone asks you, this can just unfold on a personal level. Someone asks you for your advice and then you, or your thoughts, and you give it, and then it's immediately just a contradiction. So it's really just a vehicle to share or, you know, what they are thinking or have going on. So absolutely. I think that odds are, if you're listening to this and you're, you know, episode 116 in and we're 20 minutes into the show, you are at least open to the idea as the audience of being coached. And so that, I do think that that's important. What about the flip side of that coin, John, on the coach's side? What's the mentality that you adopt when you go into that?
Being a coach, you have an incredible responsibility to know your craft and stay up to date. That's imperative. Admit when you're wrong, because you're going to be sometimes, and learn from mistakes. Be vettable, and really earn people's trust and respect. And know that it's not about you. It's about getting the wins for your clients. And you can share in the greatest joy when that happens.
Absolutely.
So coaches in all those capacities need to communicate, need to collaborate, and need to refer more. So I'm talking about coach to coach as far as that part of the team as well. Nobody's an expert in everything, except for that one guy who's uncoachable. So we build teams just like pro organizations, you know, whether that's, you know, sports or business. A professional organization is built around a team concept. And the more you focus on what you do best, or saying to myself, you know, what I do best, and create a network around that, the better you'll look and the better your results will be. Because, you know, all of a sudden now you've got, you know, the support of others recognizing what you do and the appreciation from them that you recognize what they do.
Absolutely. And I think that that's such a highly rewarding, you know, cocktail of relationships when it does happen, and fraught and stressful and ineffective when it doesn't.
Yeah. And so this topic is really an interesting one today, or today's show, because we started off talking about, you know, preparation and rehabilitation. So that's kind of the training side of the equation for peak performance. And then there's what we might do in a physical therapy or other capacity. Suddenly we went into, well, actually it's all coaching. And we need coaching, and coaching is so valuable. But now I think we're going to wrap up the show by talking about, now might be the time to provide, in terms of providers do, of all these services, and recipients to use more online coaching services.
Yeah, John, I think that, you know, snapshot moment in time where we're at with the COVID-19 situation, the coronavirus broadly known as, and the practice of, social distancing. We are all, it's uncertain times, but, you know, life is still going on. We have people working virtually, and you have been kind of on the front For many years now. You have been personally with your business working towards this model, and you're sort of, you have some experience with it. And so I'm just interested in, you know, what we're in the midst of, what your recommendations is, because life is going on and we can continue to still be effective, but I just don't know how. So I'm sure that you can help us learn about that.
Yeah, I think this will be a fun discussion, and I'm not exactly sure where we'll try to take it. But, you know, if you look at, first of all, we've had the decentralized workplace now. I mean, certainly over a decade, and longer depending on what field that you're talking about. But I might have been a little bit ahead of the curve. I think that's fair to say when 6 or 7 years ago, I started moving a lot of my work in terms of, say, you know, movement correction and training and coaching onto, a virtual model or an online model. And that was just following along with where technology was. This wasn't cutting edge technology. It's actually technology we all have available. It's just not been entirely adopted for these purposes yet, to the extent that it should or can be. So we got the social distancing thing right now. Everyone's aware of it. And we're in a bit of a crisis mode, of course. But it also is a valid time to have that wake up call. It's like, oh gosh, there are a lot of things that we can increase efficiency and effectiveness in service provision by using remote work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question. I think that we're here and we're going to be considering it, looking through a different lens, and absolutely it applies broadly.
So I would say this, it applies to that coaching service provision mightily. So we're talking about coaching in the concept, the context, of physical prep and rehab. Mm-hmm. And so right now I would say this, anyone who requires non-emergency medical care, when you have needs for emergent things and hands-on and you've got, things that need to be done to you. Yeah, that's what we need our institutions for. And, we want to encourage people to continue to do that. But if you don't, you should use, particularly right now, a telemedicine or telehealth model. All you need is a simple device and a connection. That's all that's required on the recipient end. And we need to make that available for everyone, but everyone should start to utilize these things more for their services, because then we can decrease, risk of contamination and infection very effectively.
Sure, sure. And I think that, okay, so we're in this, it's a scary time. So I think we can admit that it is. And at the same time, the idea that the very simple and grounded idea that having a telemedicine or telehealth model, this is something that we have talked about on this show several times, is effective, and it not because, but sort of in spite of the climate, I think is what you've advocated in the past, is that there are many advantages to it, in fact. So it's not just in a dire time. It seems like almost anyone can do it if you do have a device and a connection. At least here in North America or in America broadly. I'm interested in sort of like your thoughts on how it unfolds, because you've done a lot of this, but not under these sort of dire circumstances.
Sure. I think there's probably going to be a story in here, if you allow me, and I think we probably have enough time. Sure. but looking forward, first of all, at some point we're going to see some change in the current situation. I'm not going to predict that, but a lot of let's abbreviate phys prep and rehab can actually be done optimally using a video conference model. And people are going to say, "Well, whoa, really?" And I'll say, let's talk about that. So you're going to save time, because there's no commuting, there's no waiting room. We take that away. You're going to save the energy that's required to do that on a personal level. Generally, it's going to cost less, because obviously the cost of brick and mortar applications is higher. You're going to decrease currently your risk of, say, contamination and or exposure. And you're also going to have a lower impact in terms of pollution and those kinds of commuting costs on the environment. So all those things are proven. And then, in all likelihood, you're going to get more time and attention from the provider than is possible in a brick and mortar application because of, cost constraints.
Mm-hmm. More time. I'm curious on a couple levels. Like in the past, we've talked about, what if, you're used to saying, hey, I need to go in there so I can make that face-to-face connection. They need to see me move. You know, they might need to, you know, actually sort of diagnose, I don't know the terminology, but, you know, I think you say, you know, if you're a clinician, you're sort of looking at someone's movement. So what if someone receiving PT in the past or coaching in the past or training coaching has said, I really need to be there for it to be the most effective. What's your sort of response from experience to that question?
I think this is where the story can come in, just because I think a story explains things better. So in trying to answer some of those questions that you have, where when a person says, I need to be face to face, need to touch and some things like that. I'll explain this with a story. I got contacted through my website. I won't use a name, but just this past year, 2019, by a guy who was an athlete and had some chronic anterior knee pain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he contacted me, you know, because I make myself available. I'm not like always like running the meter. And I said, well, why don't you do one of those free discovery sessions? So, you know, it's available on the schedule. You can do a 15-minute discovery and we'll link up our video screens and we'll, you know, just, you know, kind of talk about how this system works, because you have some questions about it, and then we'll go from there. So we did that. And the guy's 29-year-old motocross racer, had a history of chronic anterior knee pain, status post 12 months, something like this. And so we're, you know, chatting a little bit about it. And so I said, well, I think you would be a good candidate for this model. And then his response was, well, I don't believe that. I don't see how there's any way that you can look at me across a video and figure out what's going on. I think it's a ripoff and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I heard it and I just wasn't offended at all, but I said, I get that. I understand. And I have enough people to work with that I'm not going to try to hard sell you. And so I tell you what, go do what you need to do, but the door's always open if you need me. So let's just leave it at that. And so he did. And I also gave him my phone number, because that's kind of who I am. And so a couple months went by and he got back to me and he said, I think he said, dude, said, dude, you know, look, I went to three other places and they did this stuff, you know, some, they put heat packs on me, cold packs on me, had me ride the bike. I got some ultrasound, got some dry needling, cold laser. I'm no better. I might even be worse. And I was like, well, okay, we don't need to bash anybody here. You know, those can be useful tools, but most of those tools are really designed to treat your symptoms, not address the root mechanical cause of the problem. And, you know, everybody's got a different way of doing that, but apparently that didn't happen for you because you're still in this mode. And I said, well, what we really need to do is, you know, you need to actually, you know, go online and pay and register and schedule an appointment at your convenience and we'll do this. And so he, you know, he still, you know, had some, I have some concerns. Like I just don't see how this is going to work. So, well, let me explain to you that really how we do things, maybe as a master clinician to say it that way is, you know, I need to see you. A phone call is not going to do it, but I don't need to be in the same room with you to see you. I just need to see you. So I can do that very well across the screen. And also, you know, then we're going to be able to identify your problem in all probability. And then we can figure out what the path to take is. So, okay. He said, all right. So, you know, we get together and, you know, we're looking at each other across the screen. And I said, well, first of all, let's just slow down a little bit. And I want you to tell me all about what you've been experiencing. When did it start? What makes it worse? What makes it better? You know, kind of the taking the history thing. But, you know, I'm going to tell you, I'm not really in a hurry here. I know I've got plenty of time to go through this and I want to listen. I want to pick up clues. I also want you to feel good that you can do this. So, you know, he goes through and, you know, tells me, you know, about, you know, what has been happening, and gets this pain in his knee, you know, during his training and also when he's racing, you know, on his motocross bike. And I said, well, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do a couple simple movement screens. And so one of the things that we have in the physical therapy world I got from physical therapist Gray Cook in Virginia. It's the selective functional movement assessment. So it's a series of simple movements where we have a person do these whole body patterns and we watch. And usually as an expert physical therapist, you can pick up if the pattern's not good. And usually you can see where the deficiency lies.
Yes. Okay.
So I said, well, okay, do a few things. I said, let me see a squat. And so he did a squat and I said, you realize as you're trying to get down into depth, you're torquing around the back door with your left hip. And he's like, yeah, I can feel that. So what's wrong with my hip? I was like, well, I don't know anything's wrong with your hip. Let's move things down a little bit so I can watch your feet and let's see that again. So he does it again. And what I notice is he's extremely limited in his dorsiflexion. On his right ankle. Okay. So he's got right knee pain. Mm-hmm. He's got a limitation in his dorsiflexion, in other words, ability for the shin to go forward over the foot mm-hmm. on the right foot. And when he squats, his hips go to the left. And I was like, oh, okay, I think we see something here. So we kind of start talking through that and said, well, what the problem is because you all that squat showed me was, that basic movement, and we can go ahead and look at some other things if we want, but I don't think there's anything wrong with your hip. I think the problem is it's the deficiency in the ankle. So first of all, I said, what's up with the ankle? He says, well, yeah, I sprained that like 2 years ago, and it seemed like it healed up, never really did anything with it. And I was like, okay, well, it's got stiffness now. We know this. Ankle doesn't hurt. It's just stiff. But when he's riding the bike and his feet are on the pegs, if anybody's ever done that, sure. you're basically in a squat, partial squat, weights on the balls of the feet, and it's dynamic. You're kind of, taking loads, you're going up and down, and you're not really, there's no rest, especially for a motocross racer. They're not sitting on the seat at all. So I said, what's happening is that ankle doesn't allow proper squat mechanics. So in order to get down and use the right position on the bike and absorb force, you got to drive that right knee way forward, which then starts to make the cartilage surface under the patellofemoral joint and that patellar tendon not happy, because this is like, well, you're overloading. So I said, okay, so we're working through that. So he's like, well, how are you going to fix it across the screen? Don't you need to like beat on me or whatever? I was like, well, that's one model, but it's not the only model. So one of the things, I've lifetime of practicing this stuff, certified as a manual therapist, really love manual therapy, do a lot of it. But over time, I actually have figured out, and others have done it too. I'm not claiming to be the only one. There's a way to instruct a person to massage, manipulate, and mobilize themselves pretty much just as effectively as a practitioner can do. Not always, but in most cases, yes.
John, I think I love that story. I think that I was very curious to see where it was going to unfold. So where did you go from there?
Okay. So I said, here's what you're going to need to do. Take off your belt. And he's like, what? And I was like, trust me, take off your belt. This guy's, he's like that, so I'm like, he's gonna fight on everything. And that's okay. I figured that out, and he seems like he's getting.
Sure. Well, and in the context of this story, it's actually good, because he's the skeptic in all of us. He's like, I'm giving you no benefit of the doubt. You got to prove it to me.
Yeah, my knee hurts. You're telling me it's coming from my ankle. Now you're telling me to take off my belt. WTF. Well, okay, so he does it. I say, look, take the chair that's next to you. What I want you to do is I want you to put your foot up on the chair. Okay, so he puts his foot up on the chair. I said, now, don't let your heel come up, but bend your knee and put some weight into your leg and push your knee as far forward, this is the right one, over your foot or those toes as you can. Don't go to pain, just go as far as you can and then back off it. Okay, we saw that. Now take that belt, make a loop. Put it around the top of your foot. You can feel in there where your ankle crease is. So the two leg bones comes down, that's, the tail curl joint and tib fib are there. And then the talus or top foot bone sitting there. You can feel that crease. Okay. Put the belt right there. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to snug that belt up and pull down and back, not as hard as you can, but just hard enough till you start to feel a little bit of pressure, maybe some mild soreness right in that spot where the stiffness is. Okay, he's doing that. I say, now combine that. I want you to lean forward and press into that again while you're pulling back. And I want you to do that for a couple of breath cycles. Okay, ease off. All right, there's your assignment. You know, he's like, well, aren't you going to give me like 10 exercises? I mean, no, I don't believe in that. And the research does not support. In fact, consistency and results go down almost in direct correlation if the number of exercises goes up. So we're not going to do that. Here's your exercise. 3 times a day, I want you to spend about 2 minutes. I want you to work on that ankle mobility. And then I want you to do one squat and test it. Let's, you know, just check back with me. In fact, the way this guy is, I'm like, this is probably going to solve most of your problem, but you know what? One and done isn't enough. Two and you're through is probably going to be what I want to do with you. So if you, you know, trust me again, I want you to set up another session about 10 days out. So 10 days out, he comes back on the screen and he says, man, I'm not sure we need to do this appointment because I'm like 80% better. You know, ankle's moving more. I don't have a crooked squat anymore. And my knee, I mean, it's just, I barely feel it at all. I think as soon as you get better on some. And I said, I agree with you. It's going to. But here's the thing. That's just what it takes to get you normal, functional, mobile, and out of pain. But that's not quite enough to get you to the level that you need to be to take, you know, the loads and forces that you're going to get as a competitive athlete. So we need to actually put another thing in.
Mm-hmm.
So then he says, oh, okay. So, you know, I've got a gym membership. And so you're going to walk me through another 15 item workout, aren't you? No, we don't need to do that. In fact, you know, all you need to know about training quite a bit, but there's one thing we need to do is we need to train your body to be stronger, to accept loads in that position and pattern that was problematic because that thing has kind of, you know, it's atrophied a little bit. We want to bring that back. And so he said, well, how am I going to do that? And I said, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to use a backpack with some weight in it or a weight vest. So we're talking 20 or 30 pounds. That's all we need. And I want you to take a 2x2. So everybody knows a 2x2, you know, it's a mm-hmm. piece of dimensional lumber, you know, okay. Put it out. It's got to be about, 18 inches or so in length and put it on the floor and you put this weight vest on. And I said, okay, hold on to something for balance. So I'm not really trying to test your balance right now, but I want you to bear weight on the balls of the feet exactly like you would be in the position on your motorcycle. Okay, so now what I want you to do is I want you to do these loaded squats through full range in this setup because that's going to be specific to your demands. And then the final thing it says, we want to duplicate, you know, how you use your body the most. So I also want you to do isometric holds at about mid-range because that's, again, happening on the motocross bike, every rep. And so he's going through a full range, but he's pausing at halfway and holding that for a count of five. And then doing, you know, I'm just having him do a couple sets of that. And it's sure. That's sure. really all you need.
And so wait, John, what's the 2x2 for? Is he on the 2x2 on the balls of his feet then? Is that what?
Oh yeah. On? Yeah. Because okay, that's exactly how he bears weight on the motorcycle.
Sure.
We don't need the heels, you know,
yeah.
And we don't want them. That's not appropriate because it's not the same movement pattern. You know, so again, everything has to be specific. Really what it's not just me, but what the expert clinician can do is cut out all the bull crap. You know, you don't need to, you know, in this case, it might be fun to do, but you don't need, you know, play on the Bosu ball and get the band out and go over, all those things have a place. But, you know, if like with this guy in particular, you know, what's going to work, you're next on the line, John, sort of feel like, yeah, okay, this is it. And then I told him, I said, okay, now you don't need another appointment. I don't need to take you through anything. I know this is going to work if you're intelligent with your training progression, but I do want you to email me or text me or call me, in another, couple of weeks and just make sure that you got your outcome that you did. And he's pain-free and performing at a high level.
That's an amazing success story. That was a cliffhanger and I didn't know where we were going to end up. I love the fact that he was so skeptical. I respect that in any person, but in particular in this, you know, sort of reluctant, tried other things, certainly had a motivation. And you know, was really a skeptic, and you said, and you know, he said, prove it to me, and you said, I will, but you got to get on board. And man, that's an amazing illustrative story that I had not heard before.
Yeah, it just came out, you know, to share today.
Sure.
Talking, but you know, I think that's the thing. I fully respect and maybe even expect a person to say, I just don't have any belief that this could work. But in the end, you know, so the guy, you know, he wasted a lot of time and money elsewhere, but finally, sure. You know, and I can't solve everything, you know, but if you're, you know, an athlete with a chronic injury, you know, and you want to know about training and movement correction, yeah, that's what I do. But, you know, I fully expect a person to say, well, how in the world can, you know, we have this like, you know, video conference and, you know, and I say, well, we can, again, if it's limited.
Sure.
So that's a great, I guess it is a great story. I've got numbers of those, but you've probably heard enough from me.
Well, John, though, I think you make an important point that, you know, he's going in, he's got knee issues. I think there's two points. One, it can happen via screen share. If you have a master clinician, so I mean, part of that, what I've learned just through our talking is that you're getting to the root of the, you know, you're finding the root without any preconceived notions. So you didn't, you know, he came in with knee pain, but you said, I need to run you through these screens to determine where it's coming from. You didn't have any sort of vested interest in it being tightness in the ankle and having that affect the hip. You just went where the information led you. And so some of it really is, you know, if the people that he was seeing face to face didn't have that same master clinician mentality, then perhaps they would be, you know, with ultrasound or icing or heat treating just the pain in the knee instead of identifying its source. So I think that that's the first observation that I'll make about the story. The second is that really the way that you do it, or the way that you did it in this particular case where we have movement screens and you're observing them, a screen share is a super effective way of doing that. And if, you know, if what you need to do is see them move, then, you know, just like you said, it might be optimal for this kind of diagnosis and treatment recommendation.
Yeah. And so a couple things to say, like if I, you know, heard you saying, well, how do you do this? If you're a clinician, explain it just a tiny bit more. Mm-hmm. I'd say, well, okay. Yeah. We want to have like the, you know, the master clinician has a couple of things maybe going for her or him. You know, you've got the eye. So, you know, you've seen thousands of people and maybe got some decades of experience where it's like, okay, you know, I know what to look for. I know what the big rocks are. Not going to waste a lot of time. I want to spend some time. Yes, but I don't want to waste it. And then also you kind of, you know, you have a system, you know, or an operating procedure where you go through and it's like, okay, well, we're going to connect the dots, so to speak. Like I was calling you a convergent thinker before. And that's the same thing that I want to be doing there too, is, you know, getting to a hypothesis and, mm-hmm. and testing it and then intervening appropriately. So yeah, that's how we do it. But really the key though is, on the recipient side,
yes,
all they need is a device. And again, there's different software out there than what I use, but I use a meeting software that has a video conference feature and it has HIPAA security built into it. So those are interesting, you know, things that we could talk about there. But I usually encourage folks to use a tablet or a notebook because it's just nicer to look at a big screen, but it works fine on a phone. And so this guy was 29 years old. He had pretty good vision. So like, yeah, fine. You can use your phone. That's fine. But on my end, it's really important that I've got the tools. And so this would be advice for other clinicians in all these fields. You've got to make the user experience awesome. And so first thing, you know, is you've got to invest in cameras and microphones so that you've got, you know, the person watching is getting some really good audio coming in. It's not garbled or echoey. They've got a nice clear picture. So you got to upgrade from, you know, say like, you know, the internal cam on a device. We need the right amount of lights and, you know, minimize glare. So you got to kind of get all that right. It's a production.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I have a giant whiteboard. I've got models. I've got a gym space. you know, that I use that. So like you said, you know, first of all, you can screen share, you can screenshot a screen share. You know, that those pictures can be sent back and forth. We can capture some of the video to save. This is not super high tech, but you know, as a clinician, you're going to need to be able to do that and do it well and do it efficiently, because the person's counting on you, and you know, you're just going to look bad if you're not good at that. So, you know, I would say all of that is, you know, that's right up front. And then there's another level of, well, if we're just doing, say, a coaching, training, advisement type thing, all the things I mentioned are probably going to work fine. But if you're under the Telemedicine Act, and let's say in your state and your license, and you're doing physical therapy or another, you know, profession that is under those auspices, then you have certain things that you have to do in the visit to make it appropriate, and documentation and sharing of that and coding. And so, you know, there's another layer or level that's the responsibility of the practitioner to make all this work, but it's not really that difficult. And I think that what I would offer up, you know, right through this show today, is I'll help any colleague, particularly right now with the crisis going on in physical therapy or training or fitness or any coaching. This is my wheelhouse, with advice on what you need for equipment, what the laws say, what the procedures you need to go through. I'm happy to help you. Just reach out to me.
John, well, it's a heck of an offer. It really is. And I think that, you know, I'm just so glad to use the story to illustrate how effective this can be. And I think that, I don't know, I'm just really absorbing all that. And that's a great offer. So again, if, you know, you're mulling this over from the provider side or the coaching side of things, how could someone get at you?
That's always the same. You can find me at thelifetimeathlete.com. You can contact me there, and on all the media platforms. You know, I think I've gone over those quite a bit, but they'll be in the show notes as well. So sweet. Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, I'm available.
Nice. John Boy, thank you for dropping those tasty nugs today.
It was nugalicious. Fun for me to share. I thank you for PK for being with me, and audience, you guys are awesome. Stay well. Use good science and your common sense, and no joke here, be a hard to kill, awesome human beast, lifetime athlete, and help others to do the same.
Adios, everyone.